Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light, and, you know, given the nature of all this new shit, you know, this could be a lot more complex. I mean, it's not just, it might not be just such a simple, you know?
What's up, guys? Welcome to Four Thumbs Up. My name is Robin Koppel. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, I'm joined by my best bud, Bobby Bethke. What is up, dude?
What's up, Robin and everyone?
And this week is a big week for movie nerds, comic book nerds. It's like the culmination of so much. Avengers Infinity War is almost upon us.
Yeah.
And we're all leading up to it in our own different ways and, you know, preparing. Some poor souls are signed up for a 36-hour marathon leading straight up.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing
that. I feel
that,
like it would ruin the experience of the movie itself.
You'd be so burnt out for Infinity War.
Yeah, and, you know, they've apparently been doing it for, like, Age of Ultron and, like, every big event one. They do, like, a big screening and, like, the horror stories from the front line. Really bad.
The horror stories.
But Bobby did a very interesting thing, a decision that I deeply respect, if I haven't joined him myself, is he decided with his friends to watch every single movie in the MCU, a sizable number, to be sure. And, like, you did it in, like, what, like a span of 3 weeks?
Yeah, we started around March 27th, I believe.
Yeah, so literally.
Rough, like, right under a month.
Yeah, like 30 days, yeah, to absorb so much. So basically, this whole thing is, as we review and prepare for Infinity War, this is a great way to kind of recap the whole past 10 years of our lives, basically.
Yeah.
But I have so many questions. Like, first of all, how are you doing? Are you holding down?
I'm hanging in there, man. See, the good thing is that they get better and better as you go on, just like general trajectory. So that's nice.
Yeah, I was actually, one of my questions was, did the quality actually ramp up as like we felt it has been all these years? Kind of.
It really did. I'm watching it with my two roommates, and we're doing it in a slightly different order, where we watch not chronological release date, chronological based on the events that they happen in the MCU.
Oh yeah, I have questions about that too, but keep going.
Yeah, we can talk about that. But the only major shifts are Guardians 2 came much earlier than it comes in its release date chronology, and Doctor Strange comes a touch later, are kind of the big shifts.
Mm-hmm. And you watch Captain America 1 like before anything
that was
else.
The first one, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like they're not really too skewed compared to the release date in the real world. So I feel like I do have a good idea of how they've improved, and they definitely have. Kind of the low point of Thor 2, which I had not seen until this rewatch through all of them, and they were not lying about it being the worst one.
Yeah, like everyone says universally it's the worst one. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was like a running joke or like, you know, exaggeration or something, but you texted
it
me.
It actually
and it was like,
is, yeah. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I was expecting to like it. and I was like, oof. but it's they really, after Ultron, they really, there's no remotely bad one. I'd say the worst one since Ultron came out is probably Doctor Strange, which is still pretty good.
Yeah, it's still pretty solid, yeah.
And all of their high points, like their past four have been Black Panther, Ragnarok, Homecoming, and
Civil War or Doctor Strange?
I guess Guardians 2. But we watched four in a row of, it was ridiculous. We went Civil War, Homecoming, or Civil War, Black Panther, Homecoming, Ragnarok. And it was, all four of those are excellent, excellent movies.
Right.
Whereas compared to the first four, where we had Cap 1, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, and Thor, before we get to Avengers, those four are kind of a little bit shakier. Both in kind of filmmaking quality, I think, and as well as kind of having that MCU brand.
Right, because they're still just establishing it. And
yeah, I mean, especially Thor is like, it has, you can tell that it wants to have this tone of kind of a Shakespearean story. Right. That's why they got Kenneth Branagh, I'm assuming.
Right.
And it does in part, like the types of things that we think of when we think of an MCU movie at this point, of like stylized while still being unified or part of this bigger thing, shining through, it's kind of there in pockets of the movies. And obviously the one that encapsulates that best and most consistently is Iron Man 1, since that's kind of what their model was, since they saw how successful it was. But especially Cap 1 and Thor 1, there are some dips in kind of story, in maybe the level of humor. They didn't really get that funny, I think, until Avengers, outside of Robert Downey Jr. and Favreau.
Right.
Though there are some jokes in Thor. But it's interesting because from a filmmaking standpoint, you really see that they kind of cracked their own code of what they wanted these movies to be right around Ultron. Because even before, right before that, with Winter Soldier, it's still, Winter Soldier is still kind of its own thing, I felt like.
Yeah.
Whereas after Ultron, all of these movies have cameos from other Avengers. All of these movies have the same tone, for the most part, and kind of the same kind of goal, I think. Right. But it's really interesting, I think, just seeing, you can kind of tell, just like behind the scenes, you can kind of just feel them starting to get on their feet, and then crawling and walking and then running, and then by the end they're just like sprinting. Like Black Panther was like we all know about Black Panther. So I think it's I honestly think that they've done a better job letting each director shine through, because they've just become so sure of the things that they do want to control, if that makes sense. Watching these movies, it felt like Cap 1 and Thor 1 do feel, in my opinion, a little generic. Whereas you get to Winter Soldier and Ragnarok, and those are clearly director-driven, in my opinion, especially Ragnarok. And it feels like they kind of just figured out what the things that they wanted to have, like Feige wanted to have studio control over, and like kind of like check marks that they had to have. And then they just said, beyond those things, like, we need you to reach these benchmarks, but then beyond that, like, go nuts. And you get to see that shine through a lot more the longer you get into the MCU. I think for better and worse, I mean, I rag on Guardians 2 a lot.
Yeah.
And my opinion did not change all that much watching it the second time. Because
they gave him so much freedom on that thing.
Right, but at the same time, they really did let him make his movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my kind of rambling start to the experience.
No, it's amazing. You covered like basically all my questions and like one. But yeah, it was like it was interesting, like looking at the list of them, because like we've kind of lived through them, you know, in real life or whatever as they came out or whatever. But
yeah,
like phase one. Well, at the start of it, they're like, they don't even have a script for Iron Man as they're shooting. Like they're stumbling through it and like, you know, and pull it off so expertly. You know, like, saving the whole fate of their entire operation with that movie, you know.
Yeah.
But it kind of almost feels initially like they're shaking off the rust of the past 10 years of superhero movies with like weirdly campy Catwoman and you know, Batman by Schumacher and like all these, you know, different things going on.
Yeah, cuz the only superhero movies recently that had really made waves were Nolan. I mean, Iron Man 2 was in production roughly the same time The Dark Knight was.
Right.
So Batman Begins, maybe a little bit of X2, Unbreakable, but that's totally removed from most superhero movies. So, I mean, that's what I think is most impressive, and I was really glad to kind of just be conscious of while watching these movies, is that it's just, they built this from scratch for the most part. And it's clear that they had their hiccups, but at the same time, they really did, at every level. I mean, I feel like from a executive level, from a directorial level, from an acting level, an editing level, cinematography level, they all kind of just improve with each kind of coming wave. And I think that that makes sense, obviously, and it just reminds you just how gargantuan this accomplishment is of the movie that we're going to see very soon.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's a full 10 years of growth and improvement and evolution, almost universally in a positive direction, which is just astounding.
Right. And you mentioned the work they put in and the groundwork they laid. And, you know, we rag on Warner Brothers and DC on an almost weekly basis for absolutely not doing that. And we obviously see the results.
No, bro. They're starting their new DCEU with the Spielberg movie. Just kidding.
Which is like, well, I'm kind of okay. I'm sure it'll be separated from everything else and, like, won't even be, you know, like, it'll just be him making a World War II movie. But
yeah.
I don't know. They're starting their Joker cinematic universe, though, with their four.
Oh, my God.
That's so good. But what is interesting about, like, the way we're talking about these movies is charting their quality and charting their trajectory is, like, we're looking at them as, like, the product of a studio, like, almost more than you could, like, for any other franchise, quote-unquote. Like, we don't talk about Universal Pictures having such a hand in the Fast and Furious or whatever. But, like, this is, like...
Yeah.
They've been kind of like unique in like their studio as the not necessarily artistic, but certainly like vision over everything and like really.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like they've weirdly, as they defined that approach, they've kind of like. Like I know like phase one, they're still figuring it out. They're setting the building blocks very commendably how they build up to the Avengers. Like that's one of the coolest things that ever happened in like, you know, movie history at this point. But then phase two, I remember everyone feeling kind of like weirdly let down like every time, like, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Because honestly. Like they fell into a rhythm like of some sort of like, or maybe comfort or maybe like they kept like with the same easy, slightly dark, slightly on game-changing tone, like, and criticisms of the stakes are never actually real and stuff like that. Like, all these themes that we were talking about leading up to Ultron when, like, you know, it's just another big villain and no one's actually going to die and it's another world-ending blue beam into the sky, you know?
Yeah.
And Thor the Dark World is kind of like a microcosm of that, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, thankfully we had both Guardians movies kind of spliced into the middle of phase two.
To break that up, yeah.
But yeah, it's not as great. I mean, I don't really like Ultron that much anyway either. I think I like Iron Man 3 more than most people.
I do too.
Maybe we can get into all of that.
Yeah, like later. As I'm saying that, I'm realizing that phase also has Winter Soldier, Guardians, Iron Man 3, which I'm like fine with, you know, but it's like, I guess it was easiest to tell when they were, phoning it in or like not at operating at full capacity, you know?
Yeah.
Like, whereas, and I feel like for better or worse, legitimate or otherwise, those criticisms, they heard them and then, or, you know, just along their trajectory, once they get to phase three, they are blowing out the everything out of the water, you know. They're just full on quality, like progressive, like meaningful, like you know, they've nailed the crossover stuff and they've nailed the tone. That's a huge thing, is the tone.
Yeah.
Well, I guess now I'm remembering, like, what was it, like 2013 or whatever this was happening, like a big meaningful moment for a lot of people was when Edgar Wright had to leave Ant-Man.
And yeah,
like, we read all these think pieces about like, oh, they're just movies by studios. The age of the director is dead or whatever for franchise movies, or, you know, not artistic. But they kind of turned that on their head a little bit with, you know, Coogler.
Yeah, I mean, Well, yeah, I mean, I agree with you that kind of in phase two is where you kind of get that. That's where the fatigue set in for me. But really starting around everything right after Thor 2, I felt has at the very least has had a clear voice, with maybe the exception of Doctor Strange and a teeny bit Ant-Man.
Did Ant-Man feel really what's the word, like sterile, like not personality, like there's comedy in Paul Rudd and stuff, but like in terms of being exciting.
Yeah, it's the one that feels the most like the early Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And a teeny bit, and it, like, I feel like most origin movies are like that too, because you just have so much kind of boxes you have to check. Yep. But because, yeah, I mean, I would say the worst ones they've made since, I think that summer where they released Winter Soldier and Guardians 1 is where it really started to turn around.
Yeah.
And the just quality just skyrocketed. And I would say the worst ones they've made since then are probably Doctor Strange, Ultron, and Ant-Man. And all three of those are still good. Maybe throw Guardians 2 in there. All four of those are good movies. They're enjoyable. They're just not as good as the high points of Ragnarok and Black Panther and Civil War. Right. You really see, like, phase one, they're kind of figuring out what they have here. And then Avengers is the first one that's just, besides Iron Man, which is just kind of like mind-boggling that they pulled that off just off of no script. But yeah. Avengers is where they feel really confident in what they're capable of doing. And then phase two, kind of struggling to adapt to the fact that they are capable of making these movies more than what they can be as just a base level studio movie. And then phase three really just hitting the ground running with all of their movies and just knocking it out of the park all the time.
Yeah. Like, I remember, like, the nerds on, like, the subreddit or whatever would be like, we'd see, these are one of the first, they made a big deal out of announcing their full slate, like the next, like, 10 movies they were going to make. And everyone's like, how do you even know what you're doing that far in advance or whatever?
Yeah.
But, like, seeing the list of all the movies, like, the day they announced, I guess phase three, and it was like Civil War.
Oh my God.
Black Panther, Captain Marvel. We didn't know Spider-Man was happening yet, which would have destroyed all of us. But like, and since then, like, because they're still not done releasing all of them, like, whenever I look at that lineup, it's like those premises, like the what I know those movies are going to be and the potential they have to be is so exciting on it. Like,
it only works, like, Civil War only works because of what they accomplished in the first two phases.
Yeah, and how we know they won't screw it up.
Yeah.
Because, like, Zack Snyder can go, like, I'm going to make The Dark Knight Returns in a movie form. And we're like, okay, buddy. But, like, you know, when they say we're going to adapt Civil War, we know they're going to, like, be legit about it. And, like, we can trust them, kind of. Because we, you know.
And that's what I've realized. I mean, technically the MCU is a franchise, but we don't think of it as that. We think of it as just like this like organism with tons of sub-franchises.
Yeah, I guess.
And
so
there's been recognizable growth in all of the franchises for each superhero that they've done a trilogy for. Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, all those movies get better as they go on, with the exception of Iron Man, which I think started by far at the best quality. And then even their team-up movies, I think, get better with a slight dip in Ultron. But, yeah. I mean, like, Civil War is... I mean, rewatching them, it's mind-boggling how good Civil War is. I think it's far and away the best one that they've done.
Really? Wow.
I mean, that's one of those few movies that is just, like, so perfect at being what it wants to be that it's just I've seen it like 7 times in the 2 years that it's come out, and it's enjoyable every time.
Yeah. You know, it was really hard to, like, not often since that movie came out have we, like, matched the level of nerd enthusiasm and, like, really joy that movie brought so many people, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Spider-Man sequence, airport sequence,
oh my God.
And just, like, even handling the heavy stuff and, you know, the really just like that felt like how they would perfectly make a movie, like, you know, it was almost a flawless execution of their
I think it is a flawless execution.
I remember, and I know we can, if I was going to put on my film critic hat, I could like criticize the cinematography in scene 4B or whatever the frick, but sitting there, those few times I saw it in the theater, I was legitimately trying to think of something that was wrong with it.
And I know.
Because I was too, you know, not blinded, because it's very legitimate, but it's, like, so overwhelming how freaking cool this movie is.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah.
Like, we'd never seen freaking 2 superheroes on the same movie screen before. And then 3 years later, there's 14 of them, and, you know, they're having a perfectly choreographed, well-lit, No. Like, and they're quipping and stuff. It's just so fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as soon as they, I think that, yeah, the linchpin, I think, was when they let the Russo brothers and James Gunn really just swing for the fences with Winter Soldier and Guardians 1.
Yeah.
It just took off from there.
Yeah, and it raises an interesting question about who the ideal Marvel director is, because initially you'd be like, oh, Edgar Wright can't play in that box or that sandbox. But like, they found like these guys, like they were accomplished TV directors. It's kind of like the franchise model of like, find the indie guy who you can mold a little bit. But like, for some reason, like they were right in the middle of artistically cool, but also totally down to play. And like, we know it's the studio's vision and we're just the, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like they took a guy, Taika Waititi. Yeah. And I mean, he, like, Hunt for the Wilder People is not a Marvel movie at all.
Yeah.
But you can kind of see how it would fit as a guy who, the guy behind that movie, how he would fit in the MCU.
Yeah.
And to their credit, they let him do his thing and he pulled it off flawlessly, and they got a phenomenal movie out of it.
Yeah. And like, being able to pluck, or knowing to pluck, Ryan Coogler to do, like, you see that this is a young guy who knows what's up. Like, he's film educated and he just proved that he can knock a franchise out of the park, you know, with all the baggage.
Yeah, I mean, he must have been like 27 or 28 when they brought him on board. Like, that's crazy.
So frustrating to hear. But like, really cool. Yeah. It's interesting because like, there was this article that came out, I guess a few months ago at this point, of like, kind of like an oral history of like the them starting, really.
And, oh yeah, that Vanity Fair piece.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah. And even Feige, because he was a producer on like X-Men 2 and stuff. Like, he's always been around, but like, how, just hearing how shaky it actually was for like a long time into the process. Mm-hmm. And it you can kind of like watch and think about them endlessly in terms of seeing how everything they were doing and struggling with. Like, you can kind of see it on screen, but then you're like incredibly impressed that they managed to pull off what they did, you know. And like, the path towards learning and improving so openly has been really interesting to kind of chart, you know, as a viewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's most impressed with me, is that after Avengers, everything they had done was unprecedented, and then they just kept taking it up a notch each time they went out and tried to make another movie. And to me, that is why they are going to deserve every dollar of their quadrillion dollars they make from Infinity War, because they did take a lot of risks. Who knows what would have happened following up the second Avengers movie, which is the sequel to the biggest movie in years, with Ant-Man. Like, I mean, that's a risk that they were willing to take.
Yeah. Like, and you kind of, I keep coming back to this thing about Phase 2, like, after Avengers, it was kind of weird because, like, Thor 2 was in there and it was like, oh, this isn't, like, blow the roof off exciting, you know. But then they do Guardians, which is out of so left field, like, you know. And the other thing is the one of the triumphs we haven't even talked about, because it seems so, you know, compulsory at this point or whatever, was Iron Man even was nowhere near a household name, you know.
My god, yeah. I mean, it came out the same summer as The Dark Knight and people were thinking like, they've got Robert Downey Jr. in this random ass movie going up against Batman.
When I was growing up, I've said this before, but like, I knew the Justice League, I knew Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, I knew that Marvel had some dudes, and I knew Spider-Man. That was freaking it.
But, yeah,
like
I mean, you knew the Fantastic Four better, and X-Men.
Yeah, exactly. And they, and the you know, the redemption story of we went bankrupt, we had to sell all these guys, and then we built them back up on the strength of our own. It was really cool. But the making Iron Man, all those characters so famous, the Avengers objectively are more popular than the Justice League, which I never thought would ever happen in my life.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because low-key, they're lame compared to the Justice League. That's my thing.
Right. I used to be right there with you. I'm just not sure where I am now. I mean, I'm a Superman stan and you're a Batman stan, but But plucking the Guardians out of the D list of your own catalog, like, you know, they're number 30 or whatever, and making that the most exciting movie of the year or whatever, and killing the box office. It's like so crazy, you know?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Really good. What else did I have to ask you? You watched it story-wise, chronologically or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
I thought, when you told me you were doing that, I was like, that is maybe the least interesting way to do it for me. Because, like, I might be in the wrong or, like, in the minority here, but I don't know if I even care about the story that much. Like, I would much
rather...
I guess. Like, I would much had rather watch them from, like, just charting them on a pure filmmaking, you know, graph. Like, you know, Ant-Man to whatever, even if it happens 2 years in the past or whatever. Like, you know.
I think that's how I would have wanted to do it if it wasn't leading up to something.
Right.
But I think with the constraint of... we're watching this so that we know exactly what's happening with Infinity War. To me, I wanted to watch it because I'd never watched really any of these movies like very close concurrently with another. Like, I'd never watched a Marvel movie and then the next day watched like a different Marvel movie. So I was really interested in seeing how clear and how consistent the character arcs for these characters would be and their superheroes would be from movie to movie. I was really curious to see how it would feel, going from Avengers, and then we had this phase where you go Thor 2, Guardians, and Guardians 2, and you kind of go into space for a while,
right.
And then you go back down to Earth and check in with Tony Stark with Iron Man 3. I was really interested to see how that would kind of just feel, so you would get a better sense of, kind of what the duration of time the characters were dealing with was. Because I was aware that the filmmaking would increase in quality. I was also aware that the acting would get better and everything gets better, as it goes on. But I was most curious to see, we've got these characters who at this point have been titans in pop culture, over the past 10 years. I really wanted to see how clear and present their character evolution was, across multiple movies, across multiple years. and I think that it was worth it to do that, because it is pretty interesting to see the evolution of, like, Tony Stark's. He is the clearest one between his trilogy. Whereas Cap is unchanged, because that's kind of his thing of just, like, he sticks to his beliefs. And Thor is hilarious because it's just like
rebooted.
He's just kind of stuck around a couple times, and then just out of nowhere, Ragnarok comes in there.
I feel like they like kind of whip Tony around a lot, because like he has to be sad in like three different movies for three different reasons, and like you know, like he's supposed to be the fun one, but like for story in every individual movie, you're like, oh, of course you have to have a character flaw or whatever. But like he has PTSD, he creates a world destroying machine twice, you know, and like, and now he's like frustrated with everything or whatever. It's you know.
Well, so I mean, like, obviously, like, I what I got from watching these in this way was that obviously Tony is the anchor for the MCU. Robert Downey Jr. is the reason they're even having Infinity War. And Iron Man 1 is just kind of exploring. It's an origin story, exploring his origin as Iron Man. And then Iron Man 2 is... it held up better than I expected it to, where it's kind of 50% the movie that I think Favreau might have wanted it to be, and then 50% where it did kind of feel like a studio was meddling. And Iron Man 2 is him trying to come to terms with being Iron Man and being this super powerful person in this world. And it's pretty interesting. The parts where it's kind of focusing on him and on Tony specifically and him trying to figure out where his place in all of this is very interesting. And then in Avengers, he has the arc of kind of learning to sacrifice himself for the team or whatever. But in Iron Man 3, it's him coming to terms with kind of the results of what he's done. And to me, that was an interesting character arc to see, where we spaced it out pretty well. And I think that I got a better sense of why he would react the way he would at the start of Civil War. Like, all of it made sense, especially his actions in Ultron made a lot of sense. So his arc was, I think, very clear and present in all of the movies. And I think that I think you still would have gotten it watching it in order of release date, but watching it through the order of his story, you really get a sense of kind of the toll that all of this has taken on him, I think. And to me, that was very interesting because, like, he's the focal point of the entire thing. He might or might not die in this movie that comes out. And getting a sense of the bedrock of the entire MCU and getting a sense of where everything with him is leading to, I thought was worth it.
Wow. So all that is to say, like, my next question was, like, did you actually care about the story? I mean, clearly, like, yeah. So, like, it charts well enough. Like, you can...
It does, yeah. That's what I was impressed by. Like, I wanted to see it this way because I kind of wanted to see Feige's impact, if that makes sense. Like, he was kind of... Like, it's kind of not only his vision, but, like, it's a lot of his input on these totally. Things. And getting to see kind of his... Like, he doesn't have meetings as frequently as, like, a director would, like, saying, like, how do we want to shoot this scene? Like, his meetings are, like, where do we want Tony to go with these things? Mm-hmm. And to me, it was cool to see that it was... All of these characters are guided with a very steady hand, and it's all natural to me. Nothing felt... And, like, I didn't feel like he was forced to be sad in any, like, three movies or anything like that.
Wow, that's cool.
It felt like it all just felt like natural reactions based off of whatever baggage he had been carrying with him that had built up and accumulated from the other movies.
Mm. And it doesn't feel false for him as a character to have to deal with baggage like that? Like,
no, because I think more than anybody, Tony's arc is just kind of coming to terms with the thing that he created, which is, I mean, in a little bit, the Avengers, where, I mean, he was the first one, and right. then... As soon as he showed up, all these other little fuckers keep popping up. So,
yeah. It's funny because, like, it might be just because of his portrayal of the character, but I always think of him as the fun one or whatever. But then as I'm thinking of him, like, you know, in comics or whatever I've read, he actually is the one with a lot of the burden because he's...
Yeah, he's by far the most troubled.
Yeah, which is so interesting and really cool that they portrayed that so accurately, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might have touched on this, but how did the world building and, like, connecting and, like, crossover stuff, did that kind of feel labored to you, or did you even notice it? Like, how did it play out?
It felt pretty natural by the time they got to, I mean, like, in the first Avengers, it's, like, the whole first 45 minutes is setting up the world and team building. From that point, it felt pretty natural. I think in Civil War it was by the time they get to Civil War is where they've really just, like, that's them just, they've set everything up that they need to and they just got to do whatever they want. So I think, but in that zone from the first Avengers up to Civil War, I think that I never really noticed it. It never really felt forced so much as just like it as just the construct of a team up movie. Like, they just have to have a reason to be together. It was weird of just having, like, the start of Ultron, all of them are going on this mission, which doesn't really seem any more severe than missions that they've carried out individually on their own at other times. So, like, you're kind of aware of that, but that's just unavoidable. As far as world building, I think that I wouldn't say that it's not, like, necessarily there. But it's like, okay. It's like there's a world for the first Captain America and a world for the first Thor that don't appear in the rest of those trilogies.
That's true, yeah.
And to me, that was a smart decision of just kind of going with better ideas that you got and things that you look that you can improve upon, and not sticking with it for just the sake of pure continuity. I'd never actually, like, the one that's the really clearest world building, obviously, is Black Panther. And that's the one where it's kind of the whole point of the movie is this world that we're not privy to until we step into Wakanda. But yeah, I mean, I never actually really noticed any kind of just
like forced crossovers. And stuff.
Yeah, like you that's what I mean. Like Falcon in Winter Ant-Man. Soldier,
or Falcon in Ant-Man.
Yeah, I mean, like stuff like that is kind of like
they get ragged on a lot.
That's
for
the
that
only
one.
Time. Yeah, that's the only time where it's like they did it just because they could.
Yeah. Which, like, another thing. If you're gonna be like an accurate whatever representation, like that's like the fun of the source material,
right? I mean, that's yeah, like that's why the MCU is the most successful franchise in the world is because comic books just lend themselves to this format so well,
right?
That serialization, like, it's, yeah, because it's just so easy to do to just draw another superhero into another comic
like,
book.
I think about this all the time, like whenever, like even when I was a kid, like whenever I would see like. He's hanging out with him and like, you know, they're together. Like that's
oh, yeah.
always fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like it's always is, yeah. I mean, even in the Arrowverse TV.
Yeah. Which is like the, and like, that's what I was gonna mention. When I think about like forced world building and stuff, what I'm actually thinking about is, you know, Zack Snyder with like the forced Flash cameo and like the thumb drive and all that stupid stuff that happened. You know, like,
oh, and Batman v Superman.
Having it done poorly is what jumps out yeah. at you. But, like, these guys are proof that it can be done right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's most of what I had. Like, obviously, we're pretty pro this whole enterprise here.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, as far as just an experiment on its own, I don't see how you wouldn't want to root for it. Like this right, is yeah. this has never happened. It's probably not going to happen again, honestly.
Yeah, because we've seen many people try and fail since.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just glad that they crossed the finish line. I'm so psyched for Infinity War.
Yeah, it really is like a special kind of culmination that like none of us have ever, you know,
mm-hmm.
been a part of. Yeah.
Should we finish with a top five, our personal top five?
Please, yes, real quick.
Ooh. All right. Let me see.
I think Iron Man is in there with a bullet for me, like from the beginning, you know.
Uh-huh. Let me see here. All right, I've got my top five.
All right, hit me.
Okay, number one, clear, easy winner, Civil War.
Yep.
Number two, Iron Man.
Nice.
Just for creating all of this, which is dope. Number three, Black Panther. The best origin movie they've made, I think.
Besides Iron Man.
Besides Iron Man.
Yeah.
four, Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
The Russo brother. The best. That has the best fight scenes in the entire MCU, yeah. I think.
Choreography-wise, yeah, certainly.
Disgusting. And then five, I'm cheating a little bit, the tie between Homecoming and the first Guardians movie.
That's a good... I love doing ties in the top five list. Like, I'm all for yeah. it. But that's a good tie because that's kind of like the... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hardest omission, probably Avengers and Ragnarok. But I'm yeah. lower on Avengers than most people are.
Yeah, you know... Whenever I think about it, like, I'm a fan out and out for that movie forever, but mm-hmm. What was more exciting about it in retrospect was literally just that it was happening, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, yeah. I've watched video essays or whatever about how the cinematography is bland or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, it was dope. It was amazing, but...
That movie is saved with the New York battle.
Oh, yeah. Just like Civil War is massively improved with the airport and everything, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I'm pretty much with you there.
Ooh.
I mean, I can't
no
even...
Thor 2?
No Thor 2, man. yeah, I love Iron Man 3, but not for, you know, anything near the top. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a pretty good spread, you know.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel's going to blow all of them off, you know, off the ledge.
Yeah, dude.
yeah, man. okay, so to finally conclude... I think we are definitely looking forward to this week, or I guess in the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so you're happy you did it. You survived.
I'm very happy I did it. I feel really like primed and prepped to see this movie.
Yeah, and it was.
I can't wait to see Captain America die. It's gonna be a bummer.
stop it right now. I do
should
not.
Should we go on record saying who we think is gonna die between him and Tony?
I've legitimately not committed any thoughts to it because I'm so. I'm not about feeling these feelings, dude. Look, there are all these lists on the internet, like. top seven characters that need to die in this movie, or like there was one that was like, who should be the most worried, or like, you know, Gamora better watch her back or whatever. It's like, so like I feel like everybody's been so, they've teased us with killing anybody for literally 10 years. Mm-hmm. Except for the one guy who didn't want to do multiple franchise movies or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
That we're like, because we know what has to happen this time. Like, we're chomping at the bit for it, you know.
Mm-hmm. I will go on record. I think Captain America is gonna get it.
I don't know, man. I don't know, because they both keep in their interviews. They both keep being cagey and like giving mixed responses. Mm-hmm. Like, there was one article that was like, Chris Evans' contract is up or whatever, and everyone got worried. And you know, I don't know. I truly don't know.
I hope I look like a fool.
Yeah, I
maybe none of them die. That's nice.
But yeah, so catch us next week for our review of this massive movie.
Yeah, spoiler alert, we'll probably like it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, thank you so much for taking the sacrifice, man, and thanks for filling us in.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Alright, man. Alright, that is our show, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Just some plug time here. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, and Patreon at Four Thumbs Pod to continue the conversation or support if you're so inclined. Questions, comments, constructive criticism, all welcome. Our theme song is Light by San Holo. Our logo was found on Google Images. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, and YouTube. And please share that iTunes link if you share it with anybody. Thank you so much to our lovely podcast hosts, Spreaker.com. Thanks to Bobby for being awesome as always. And join us very soon for another conversation. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.